JC Corcoran Podcast.
The man with a guitar behind me, and I've cued him to play, but he won't play.
His name is Dean.
Oh, you need
He was waiting to be invited.
Man with a guitar.
So basically, anything you say to the man,
that was great. Good job, Dean.
There you go, Dean.
I walk around, man with a guitar.
We need, you know what? When we get back to St. Louis, we need this.
Yes, we do.
We need this guy to just walk up behind us and start playing, you know.
Hey, Dean, every time somebody says something funny here, which might not happen very often today, but let's hear
it. Sure. That was really funny. Let's hear it.
Oh, wow.
It might be the only time you play today.
And then you have to, like, you know, there's got to be some dirge, like, for a sad story.
That was supposed to be funny, real nice try.
You'll be using that one a lot, Dean.
Stay close, Dean.
Dean, you get paid to do this?
This is my job. This is my job, yeah.
Walt Disney World employs you, or the Animal Kingdom.
My day job is working at the Animal Kingdom. And they tell me about people. I walk around, like the folks who are in line for the show that I work is called the Festival of the Lion King. Uh-huh. And they tell me about folks. And I understand you guys are JC and the U-Man.
Mm-hmm.
Do I have a moment? Can I write a song about JC and the U-Man?
Well,
right
we have
here?
Names, too. Yeah. Laurie Mack and Jennifer Sparks.
But that's too complex.
She's not going to remember. Yeah.
It's JC and the U-Man, Sparky and Mack.
Sparky and Mack.
Oh, he didn't even need time.
We're ready. We're on. You man and JC, it's a fact. The ladies tell me they would not be nothing without Sparky and Mac. Now Sparky, she's the sweetheart, the baby, it's true. And Mac, when we need to know something, the boys come to you. It's gonna be a lot of fun at the Animal Kingdom. Think about all the wild animals you can see. Now Sparky and Mac, they were entertained, that's a fact. What are them wild animals out there? Why, that's you man and JC. Man and JC.
Great, good job.
That's an open.
Wow.
John, this is the best newscast you've ever done.
Thank you very much.
Oh, I'm just getting warmed up.
Happy to see you again.
Don't be nervous. Don't be rocky. You're a teenage guest is jockey now.
And let me begin by wishing you a beautiful look.
Did that voice inside you say, I've heard it all before. It's like deja vu.
And with that, we say hello to the J.C. Corcoran Podcast here at jconthewine.com for Monday, the 26th of April, 2021. And boy, do I feel like a sap today. I posted this thing last night on Facebook. If you didn't see it, you know, the ratings for last night's show are going to set an all-time low. It was going to be a loser regardless. You know, the theaters have been closed, meaning that all the nominated films are even more unfamiliar than usual. But there's other reasons. I mean, you go back three decades, if you wanted to see movie stars, you had to do things like watch the Academy Awards, because that's the only place you could see them. And now, for God's sakes, it's like you got a little earpiece with Mary Hart's voice implanted surgically in your temple or something. You can't get away from it. So, and of course, the media makes way too big a deal out of who the host is. You get these great monologues and everything, but there's great monologues all over cable now. It's not special anymore. And by the way, after the opening monologue, it's not unusual for the host to disappear for like a half an hour and 40 minutes. They didn't really do that last night, but there were other reasons to dislike last night's show. I'll get to that in a minute here. But, you know, the entire entertainment industry obsesses over how to reach people. You know, they do all these demographic research focus groups and all these methods to just try to figure out what's in your brain and what's going to make you go absolutely nuts about a movie and go see it six times, okay? And they do tremendous millions, hundreds of millions of dollars of research every year just trying to figure that out, all right? Because they're in show business. They're in show business. And it's like, we got to get somebody to come to this stuff. But then on their biggest night, the Academy Awards, it just seems like they forget everything they know about show business. It's a terrible show. How can you be in show business? And it's like, all right, it's your biggest night. It'd be like if you turn on the Super Bowl and the guys didn't know how to play football. Oh, you know, just all these long speeches with names of people you've never heard of. And a lot of times it's just, I'd like to thank Bobby. It's like, well, who the fuck is Bobby? And, you know, 25 years ago, you wouldn't have told somebody, oh, you got to see this movie, Pulp Fiction, because it's shot out of sequence. And at the end of the movie, two guys walk out of the diner. You don't give away the ending to a show. You don't ever give away the ending. So why is it that every year now, we already know who the likely winners are a month before the show? Oh, yeah, once in a while, there's a surprise, like the Chadwick Boseman thing last night. But other than that, there's very little drama. But, you know, I have a lot of respect for Steven Soderbergh. You know, he shot a movie in St. Louis, White Palace, back about, I don't know, 30 years ago. And, you know, Steven Soderbergh is one of our most talented directors. And so he got a hold of the show last night. He said, I'm going to produce this thing. I'm going to direct it. We're going to put on a decent show. And when you watch it, it's going to be like watching a movie. And I thought to myself, okay, you know, if this guy really has a new way to present this stuff, these award ceremonies, my God, you know, he could invent a new way of doing award ceremonies, and then everybody would copy it, and then suddenly these award shows would be interesting again. But I watch it, and it was worse than a regular show. At least with a regular show, you have all the big stars and the gowns and the whole thing, and they shot it at a train station, and no Tom Hanks, and oh, but I was like, okay, well, I'll give the guy a chance. Well, I gave him a chance, and 20 minutes into the show, I was like, that's it. Get out of here. But here's the thing. What you do, you cut the show to like 2 hours. You cut out the 2.5 hours of just pure shit that's in the middle of the show, and you make it maybe like a 90-minute show, maybe 2 hours. You hit the major winners, the major categories. You sing a couple of songs. You remind everybody who died in show business over the last year. And then you go the fuck home. But they weren't listening to me, folks. They weren't listening to me. And it was a snooze fest last night. All right. Well, how you doing? We're going to be doing another celebrity interview today. We did the Peter Frampton thing on Friday, and a lot of people listened over the weekend and they're like, wow, that was really an interesting interview. And that was only the last part of it. One of these days, I'll play you some other parts of it. But today, we're going to play back our 2003 interview with Bob Seger. And you're like, JC, 2003? What's that got to do with life in 2021? Well, it was recorded right after Bob Seger was announced as going into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And so we get him to talk a lot about the old days of coming up in the business of rock and roll and just performing big shows and big concerts. And it's fascinating to listen to. And by the way, I mentioned this to him in the interview. It's like, yeah, you're Bob Seger. Okay, this is going to be a dour, sort of dark, perhaps even disappointing interview. Well, I don't know what was going on that morning, but man, he was the exact opposite of what I was expecting. And he even says, yeah, I've had people come in here to interview me before, and they always expect me to be this really, really dark guy. Bob Seger's laughing his ass off during this interview, and it's, like I said, really fascinating to listen to. So that's how we'll put a tail on this thing in about 20 minutes or so. Oh, and by the way, usually I don't watch those pre-shows because they're sappy, but for whatever reason, we had it on last night. And did you catch that Cadillac commercial where they did the Edward Scissorhands takeoff? Man, was that good. I didn't see that coming. I was very, very surprised by that. The last thing you need is somebody throwing something in a Monday morning that's just downer city, but somebody better do something about all of this very, very soon. And I speak of the coronavirus. Are you catching these stories about what's going on in India and to a large extent also Brazil and also even with regard to Japan? But this thing in India is just off the charts. There are people, they said that in some cases they have three people to a bed in the hospitals because they have been completely overrun by the virus. And a very small percentage of people in India have been vaccinated. And what India was doing, you're like, wait a minute, India, isn't that where we're getting the vaccines from? Yes, India, one of the largest producers of the coronavirus vaccine anywhere in the world. But they've been shipping it all out and they haven't been keeping it for themselves. And even if they did, they don't seem to have any policy in place to get people vaccinated. I think it's less than 10% of the total population of the country of India has been vaccinated. And it's showing because they've overrun. They are in a state of emergency in that country. And Brazil's not doing that much better either. And, you know, you're supposed to have the Olympics coming up in Japan, and they've been overrun with the virus. I think I saw a stat that said just a little over 1% of the total population of India, or I'm sorry, of Japan, has been vaccinated. And like I said, we got the Olympics supposed to be coming in there. Do I have any good news? I actually have a pretty good story. A guy I played baseball with was, we were just sitting on the bench between innings, and he overheard him talking about a trip he made to Istanbul, Turkey. And I just walked over and I go, what the hell were you doing in Istanbul? And he said, I was just visiting. God, where are you going next? Beirut? Nice, quiet, relaxing vacation. But I said, you know, once I saw the movie Midnight Express, and if you're unfamiliar with this movie, William Hayes, an American kid, this is a true story, back in the, was it the late 60s? Late 60s, early 70s, somewhere right in there. And just a dumb kid, you know, and he has this stupid idea to try to smuggle drugs out of the country of Turkey, fly back to the United States, and then either sell it to his friends or share it, whatever the case may be. But they catch him and they make an example out of him and they throw him in a, when I say prison, I'm talking about they throw him in a damn toilet. Basically, he's there for the rest of his life. And the conditions are unspeakable. And if you've seen the movie, you know what I'm talking about. When the movie's over, you're like, okay, I'm glad I saw that because it was a tremendous story. Just something I will never forget. And that's the problem. I will never forget it. It's the sort of thing that will haunt you if you let it. But what it does very successfully is it cures you of any idea you ever had of doing something illegal in a foreign country. But like I said, this prison, and if you saw the movie, you know what I'm talking about. The prison, just absolutely horrific conditions. Just, you know, makes Shawshank look like a Ritz-Carlton, which is funny and not funny at the same time because this guy told me, he said, you won't believe this, but you know the prison in the movie, they've turned it into a Four Seasons. I'm like, well, yeah, I'm sure they knocked the prison down, and then maybe they put the Four Seasons. They're like, no, they renovated the prison, and they've left parts of the structure there because it's such a historical landmark because of the movie Midnight Express. So you can go to Istanbul, Turkey, right now, and you can still see part of the place where it was shot in the next door. It's a Four Seasons hotel. The rest of the prison has been converted into a, you know, 5-star hotel. Oh, and one more Oscar note here. You're going to do the Razzies the same weekend as the Oscars, and these are the worst performances being recognized, and the worst supporting actor award went to Rudy Giuliani, who had that unfortunate role in the Borat sequel. In the movie, Borat supposedly catches Rudy with his hands down his pants during a bedroom interview with a young woman posing as a journalist. Rudy, of course, claims he was just tucking in his shirt. If anybody believes that story, I have some land, some swampland in Florida you might be interested in. And the freak show continues as Caitlyn Jenner made it official. She is running for governor of the state of California. And now this.
Neil Sedaka wrote a song called Breaking Up Is Hard to Do. I wrote a breaking up song called Baby Take Your Tongue Out of My Mouth, I'm Kissing You Goodbye. Yeah. You walk in, I walk out, we ain't got
got nothing we can talk about, baby. Take your tongue out of my mouth. I'm kissing you goodbye. I said I love you and you said I love me too. Then the next thing I know you're wearing round heel shoes. Take your tongue out of my mouth. I'm kissing you goodbye. I made the money, honey. You made the round. You can't buy nothing unless you put something down. Take your tongue out of my mouth. I'm kissing you goodbye. If love means never having to say you're sorry, I apologize. Whoever said it's better to have loved and lost than never loved at all ought to give you a call. I may be a fool, but I ain't fooling around. Oh, you don't kick a dog when that dog is down. Take your tongue out of my mouth, honey, kissing you goodbye. Oh, take your tongue out of my mouth, I'm kissing you goodbye. Big finish! Take your tongue out of my mouth, I'm kissing you goodbye.
That is actor Jeff Daniels. Yes, the Terms of Endearment, Jeff Daniels. The Purple Rose of Cairo, Jeff Daniels. And he told us he had like five agents and managers telling him, if you do this movie, you are going to ruin your career. All right? You're going to ruin everything we've worked for. Of course, that movie was Dumb and Dumber. And he showed them, didn't he? I didn't see this one coming. Kim Kardashian and Van Jones, the CNN commentator. Elon Musk is going to host Saturday Night Live on May 8th. Birthdays today, Channing Tatum, that's Magic Mike, he's 41. Jordana Brewster, I interviewed her when she was like 19 years old. I think it was her first movie. She's pretty and she's nice. She's 41 today. Melania Trump, 51. Kevin James, the King of Queens, 56. Carol Burnett, 88. We've had her on the show. And Charles Richter, the guy who invented the Richter scale, was an avid nudist. He was born on this date in 1900. Studio 54 opened its nutty little doors behind that stupid velvet rope 44 years ago today in 1977. And this, by the way, is the 35th anniversary of the worst nuclear reactor disaster of the 20th century at Chernobyl, the atomic power station. 31 Soviets killed instantly. The land where Chernobyl sits is now completely useless. I think the coronavirus has had a devastating effect on people's ability to avoid doing stupid stuff. There's a video going viral on Twitter right now that shows a couple making party punch in their toilet. They put ice sherbet and gummy worms in the bowl and then a bunch of Fanta and Sprite in the tank. Then they flush the toilet to mix the punch. Sorry if you're eating breakfast. 24-year-old woman named Bree Pritchett took a trip to Sedona, Arizona. God, is that beautiful there. If you ever get a chance. It's about, two, 3 hours north of Phoenix, and it's worth the trip. These structures that just sprouted out of the ground, these giant rock formations, are indescribable, and photographs don't do it justice. You got to go there. Anyhow, 24-year-old woman named Bree Pritchett took a trip to Sedona to celebrate getting fully vaccinated last month, and she wanted to celebrate by getting the latitude and longitude coordinates of Sedona tattooed on her shoulder. But she accidentally mixed up north and south, so now she has a tattoo for a random spot in the South Pacific Ocean. 52-year-old woman named Karen McBride, she just got married in Texas. But when she went to try to change her last name, there was a problem. She had an outstanding felony charge in her hometown, Norman, Oklahoma. She looked into it, and the felony embezzlement charge comes from 1999 when she rented the VHS tape Sabrina the Teenage Witch from a video store and never returned it. The charges were filed in March of 2000. She says she has no memory of renting it. Here's the quote. I had lived with a young man. He had two kids, and I'm thinking maybe he went and got it, didn't take it back. I have never watched the show in my entire life. Not my cup of tea, end quote. So obviously she didn't know where the tape is, and even if she did, it wouldn't help. The video store she rented it from went out of business in 2008. Even so, technically, the county still could have decided to prosecute her, but they just announced they're dropping the charges. And now she's trying to get it expunged. She says she's been let go from a lot of jobs for no reason and explains it with the quote, because when they ran my criminal background check, they're seeing these two words, felony embezzlement, end quote. Kindergarten teacher in Virginia arrested last week after a security officer at the school found cocaine in her desk. She's been charged with felony drug possession. And the world's first sky pool is going to open next summer in London. It's a pool that goes between two rooftops, 115 feet in the air, and it's clear on the bottom so you can swim around and look down and see just how high up you really are. No, thank you. All right, back to 2003 we go, and Detroit, Michigan, Bob Seger.
Where do we find Bob Seger this morning? Because we were sort of surprised to hear that you were up early and maybe doing stuff with kids and stuff like that.
Yeah, right now I'm at my writing house, which is about 20 minutes north of my the family house, and out in the woods in Clarkston, Michigan.
Really?
Just north of Orchard Lake, where we live, yeah, in Michigan.
I think that for a time there, maybe during the summer, we were neighbors for a while. I used to vacation in a little place called Weakwatonsing, Michigan, up near Harbor
Springs. Right, Harbor Springs.
I heard you had a place like sort of like right around the corner from there.
Yeah, they let me play that golf course once.
Oh, very good. Just one time, Bob?
Just one time.
Well, first of all, we got to congratulate you on the announcement that was made yesterday morning. Inductees into the 19th Annual Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
Jackson Browne, George Harrison, Prince, Traffic, ZZ Top, The Dells, and Mr. Bob Seger. That's got to be a huge thrill for you.
It is. It's a tremendous thrill. You know, when I think back to the people that I grew up listening to, Elvis and Little Richard, and then later the Stones, Beatles, and Dylan. I mean, it's pretty heady stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, Bob, some guys are kind of lukewarm on actually going to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame for whatever reasons. Why do you think that is? And
I don't know.
Do they have a point? Yeah.
I'm
sure.
Not at all. I'm thrilled.
Yeah.
I think it's great.
Do you start immediately thinking about what you want to say and who you want to thank and what songs you want to perform and stuff like that?
Yeah, I just found out actually the details because I've never been to one of them, and I guess we only do two songs, and so that's going to be tough picking which two.
I was going to say, now, just at first blush, what would you imagine those two songs would be?
Probably the one you just played.
Yeah,
Rock and Roll Never Forgets would be a good one, and then I don't know what else. I'm going to have to come up with something.
You would think that with all of those musicians and the history of rock and roll and all of that, something like Turn the Page, because it's such a
that could very well be it. Night Moves.
Night Moves. Man, I gotta tell you, you're right. How do you narrow this down to two freaking songs?
I'm sure that's going to get hammered around from now till March.
Wow. By the way, we have a one-hour special on the record with Bob Seger. That is 5 to 6, and that is Sunday afternoon here on K-Hits 96. What are we going to hear on that, by the way?
On what?
This is on the record, 5 to 6, a Bob Seger special.
Oh, right. That's the first interview I did for this Greatest Hits 2. I don't remember. I've done so many.
That's all right. Well, they can listen. It's only Sunday. It's only a couple of days away, so they can check it out. Let's, by the way, make reference to Bob Seger's Greatest Hits, Volume 2. Here's what you'll find on it. Understanding from the Motion Picture Teacher soundtrack. Fire Down Below, Her Strut, Beautiful Loser, Sunspot Baby, Kathmandu, Shame on the Moon, Fire Lake, Trying to Live My Life Without You, and that's live. Shakedown from Beverly Hills Cop 2, Manhattan, New Coat of Paint, Chances Are, along with Martina McBride from Hope Floats, Rock and Roll Never Forgets, and then let's talk about the other two songs on here. These are new songs.
Yeah, those were done Satisfied and Tomorrow. Those were done in 2002 and for the new album, which is going to be called Face the Promise, which comes out either spring or summer, probably summer, because we're going to try to finish it in March.
Which of those two songs would you like me to play at the conclusion of this interview?
Oh, it's up to you. I like them both.
All right, I'm going to put in Satisfied. We're going to play that at the end of this interview.
Okay, fine. Well, it makes sense with the rock and roll, with the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
That's cool. You, man?
You know, Bob, there are a lot of artists who would struggle to be able to put out two greatest hits. Obviously, you didn't have to struggle at all with all these great songs that, that you have. Somebody asked us to ask you about maybe an eventual box set that would be that would include all those other songs that came out on albums that are not even available on CD anymore.
Well,
what's up with that?
And, you know, we a lot of people said, where's Ramblin' Gamblin' Man and some other ones, and it's... You know, it just fit as a flow, I guess is what you'd say. And the only problem with Ramblin' Gamblin' Man was that it sounded really mono, you know, and it broke up the flow of the record. But you're right, Capitol is on me to do a box set eventually, a couple of years from now. Yeah.
We also took some questions from our audience earlier this morning because they said, you know, if you had a chance to ask Bob Seger something after all these years, what would it be? Somebody said that apparently there was a rumor going around that one of the things that you wanted to do was go back on tour, and one of the reasons you wanted to go back on tour was so that your kids, particularly your younger kids, would get some idea of what the old man was all about in his heyday, and maybe they could experience some of that Bob Seger mania again.
Yeah, well, I've only got the two kids. They're 8 and 11. I never had kids before that. So my son, who's 11... remembers vaguely the tour. He was four when we did the 96-95 tour. So, but my daughter was one, so she really wants to see it, and he wants to see it too. It's been a while.
It must be weird, though, to have had the career you have had, the gigantic career you've had, and yet you have two children who have no semblance of any of that.
That's right.
Two totally different lives that they know you in.
Yeah. Yeah, it's you know, well, they know, obviously, they see the records around, they see me signing the records all the time for charity and things of that nature, but, and fans, you know, when they send them, and it's just, you know, we just try to downplay it and kind of just be everyday parents, really.
Do they like your music, Bob?
Yeah, I don't think they really get it when I sing hard, like on tomorrow, you know, I sounded like a wounded beast. You know?
What's wrong with Dad?
They don't get that.
What's wrong with Daddy?
What's wrong with Dad? What are you upset about? But, or her strut or something like that, or... You know, but what they like is the poppies, the ballads, and things like that, you know.
Yeah. All right, so somebody asked us to ask you about, apparently there was an instance back in the 1970s here in the state of Missouri where you played, we think it might have been a cave, and somebody said,
"That's right."
Ask Bob about some of the worst concert venues he's ever performed
in. That's probably the worst. It was in Festus, Missouri.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Exactly right. And I remember I played with Nugent.
Right.
And I was complaining, and Nuge, he set me right. I got to admit, he said, you know, you're booked, you're playing. These people are enjoying it. Shut up and play.
I picture Nugent doing that too.
Yeah,
do you have a close relationship
exactly
with?
Right.
Do you have a close relationship with Ted?
I see him all the time.
Do you?
Oh. He's a great guy. Yeah.
Yeah, let's just talk about another story that had surfaced about Bob Seger, and that is that you recently were on jury duty. Is that correct?
Well, not recently. That was about 5 years ago.
All right. And what kind of a case was it?
Fraud.
And and did you make any effort to get out of it, or did you just figure, what the hell, let's go ahead and do this?
No, I went. Yeah. It didn't last all that long. I think it was about 9 days.
All right.
That's long.
That is kind of long.
Yeah,
it was tedious. The judge was falling asleep. The jurors, we would crack up because the judge would be nodding off.
Jeez,
you know?
So much for our legal system there. All right. Now, there's a famous Southwest Airlines commercial in which the guy is on stage and says, you know, like, you know, thank you, Detroit, or something like that. And it's like, no, we're in Cleveland. Any incidents of confusion on stage or any just bizarre things over the long, illustrious career of Bob Seger where you say to yourself, oh, my God, I'll live to be 100 and I'll never live that down?
No, not really. I was lucky. I mean, I've seen Spinal Tap and say the wrong town, and that never happened to me that I recall. But that was something that you were petrified of. You catch yourself occasionally, yeah. See the right city.
Talking live with Bob Seger here. Bob, you know, years before the war broke out there, you sang like Iraq. What were you thinking? No, I'm just...
that song was never a hit song, was it? I mean, it was the commercial.
The highest it charted was 17.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I remember you got into a discussion about this with Bob Costas when he was doing the old Later Show, because I'm one of those people.
That was one of my favorite interviews I ever did.
It was sensational. And
a great interviewer that guy is.
And, of course, he lives right here in St. Louis. He's a pal of ours.
I did not know that.
Yeah, and the thing about it is, I'm one of those people whose back sort of goes up, with Michael Jackson being in the news and having sold Revolution for the Nike commercials, and I don't usually like it when the songs are sold to push commercial products. But Bob asked you about that, and you gave a tremendous answer about why you allowed the publishers to use Like a Rock to sell Chevys. Do you remember what the answer was?
Well, basically to save jobs in my area, you know, because at the time they weren't doing too well, GM, and the campaign had tested so positively, and I'd actually turned it down for about a year, and a guy came into, we were having lunch, my manager and I, and a guy came in and literally walked up to our table and said, you know, how come you never do anything for the auto companies? And I said, and after we left, I said, that was a plant to my man. He said, no, that was real. And I said, you know, I'm not above this. I'm going to do it. And that's exactly what happened.
Yeah. When did you know that Bob Seger was no longer just a successful musical act, but that the thing was really a worldwide phenomenon? When did it actually hit you? Holy geez. We are off the page with this.
Yeah, I would say fall of 76, late fall of 76, when we got a platinum album for both Live Bullet and Night Moves on the same night.
Wow.
My record company president at the time, was Don Zimmerman, and he came in with both of them, and they took photos, and I said, whoa, two at once.
And those songs, Bob, like Night Moves and Main Street particularly, are those necessarily stories about things that you yourself experienced, or are those sort of like composite characters of guys that you had met? I mean, you know, how much personal storytelling is going on there?
Night Moves and Main Street are fairly autobiographical, yes. Mm-hmm. Although I was always trying to reach for something universal in each lyric, and I felt if I was too autobiographical, it would just be too inside. So
what you're saying is there was actually a girl that you remember who was a dancer, and you used to see her leave and that kind of stuff. So all that stuff.
That part is not true.
It's artistic license.
But the idea of standing outside, it was a little street actually off of Main Street, Ann Arbor, called Ann Street, and all the college kids went down there because they'd have blues groups from Chicago play there, and it was a very R&B type of thing, and that's what I grew up listening to. I actually grew up in a black neighborhood in Ann Arbor, and I would hear the music from WLAC in Nashville, all the black music. In the neighborhood, you know, people like Garnett Mims and James Brown and the Tams and Solomon Burke and Wilson Pickett, and that's the kind of stuff I grew up listening to.
And the rest is history, really, as they say. And here we are with a second volume of Bob Seger's Greatest Hits and a special on K-Hits 96 Sunday afternoon from 5 until 6. And again, a real good compilation of stuff on Greatest Hits Volume 2. Anything else going on that we should know about with that you want to tell your fans about right now?
Not really. I told the band two nights ago when I found out about 7 o'clock in the evening two nights ago that we're going to start rehearsing for the Hall of Fame thing, and we'll see where it goes from there.
Monday, March 15th, 2004, at the Waldorf Astoria. Nice joint, by the way.
Yeah. I got to wear a tux. Oh, boy.
Well, probably the one.
It's hard to imagine doing rock and roll in a tux.
Well, Bob, but you know, the one that you wore for your high school prom probably still fits, right?
Yeah, right.
All right.
My dreams.
All right, On the Record with Bob Seger, Sunday afternoon, 5 to 6 here on KX96, and Bob Seger, Greatest Hits, Volume 2, in your record stores right now. Bob Seger, we thoroughly enjoyed this. Your music gets played out the ass here on this radio station. Well, let me tell you, you got your fans here in St. Louis, and if you ever do go back on tour, if there's ever anything going on that you want your fans in St. Louis to know about, trust me, they want to know about it, and they will be in line for it. Bob Seger.
I guarantee if we go on tour, we'll be in St. Louis.
Thank you very much, Bob Seger.
All right, thanks, guys and gals.
Take care, Bob.
Thank you.
So long.
Oh, man, I hadn't heard that in a long time. That was fun. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I enjoyed hearing it again. And that's it. The Monday, April 26, 2021 edition of JCOnTheLine.com. The JC Corcoran Podcast is in the can. Please spread the word. Tell your friends, your neighbors, complete strangers. Let them know we're here every weekday morning at 7 o'clock, back bright and early tomorrow at 7. Enjoy your day. In the meantime, we've beaten this one to death. Have a good one. See you later. Bye.
The JC Corcoran Podcast.